Hi everyone. Before we get started on the story, I wanted to remind you that my memoir, Both Sides of the Fire Line, is available at any of your favorite bookstores, whether it's in your neighborhood or it's Amazon. You can purchase it wherever you like. The book, Both Sides of the Fire Line, is published by Chicago Review Press, and I hope you enjoy the book. So let's get on with the story for today. Good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com, and I am joined this morning by Ann.
Good morning, Bobby.
And by John.
Good morning, Bobby.
And Reva is not here, but she is working her last day of her career as a fire chief. Today is her last day, and so she will be joining us in future episodes. And I'm looking forward to having Reva on, as well as John and Ann. I have a story today that is not like many of the other stories that I've done. This one might be a bit of a rambling discussion of some things that have happened to me over the years, and I don't have big answers. I don't have big lessons to it all, but I think there's some observations that we can take away that might be worthwhile. And what I want to talk about is, because it's New Year's, today is New Year's Eve, 2020, and we can all be thankful that 2020 is coming to an end. I don't know if anyone out there really is sad to see 2020 leaving, but typically for me anyway, the holidays, and New Year's, I can get a little melancholy, a little down. And in thinking about why do I get down at the holidays, I started thinking about when I would get down emotionally at big fires. Now, that's probably not something everybody would think about, but I wanted to tell you what happened to me on some big incidents. Now, when I describe this, I'm not suggesting that other people have these same experiences as I've had. Certainly not. I doubt seriously that the men firefighters have had these same kinds of emotional impacts. Maybe they have, but no one talks about it, and I haven't even talked about this to other women, but I want to describe what has happened to me. And so oftentimes when I tell stories or when I talk about certain things, I don't want people to think I'm some expert. I'm not an expert on anything other than I'm an expert on me. And even then, I'm not sure I am. I never got the owner's manuals, but I figured it out, you know, for me. So what I wanted to talk about is the emotional impacts of being on some of these fires or incidents, these long-term incidents. Now, when I have been on big fires, for example, maybe it's a fire that lasted 2 or 3 weeks, or our assignment lasted 2 or 3 weeks. Sometimes the fires these days go for months and months now. But say I get assigned to a fire and it's in California, or it's in Washington, or it's in Montana, or Sonora, wherever it might be. And, you know, for the last 20 years or so of my career, I was working as an operations section chief. So I wasn't doing any real hard labor. It wasn't like I was swinging a Pulaski or throwing dirt with a shovel or running a chainsaw. That wasn't what I was doing. I was directing and planning and communicating and mediating and doing all this work trying to keep the firefighters safe, trying to keep the communities safe, the little towns, and trying to put the fire out. And some of those long-term incidents, you know, you are working easily 16 hours a day. Now, on the federal side, we have a rule that you cannot work more than 16 hours a day. Now, if you work more than 16 hours, you're supposed to mitigate that by working less hours the next day. Now, that's the rules, and the only place that really applies in reality is in your paycheck. When you turn your hours in, when you're keeping track of your time, you can't show more than 16 hours, otherwise you have to mitigate the next day. Now, as an operations section chief, I would be up at 5 to look over all of the data that came in overnight from the fire. What's the latest weather forecast? Did the fire stay where we thought it was going to stay overnight? Did the firefighters have successes last night that we were hoping that they were going to have and that we planned for? Do we have to adjust the plan for today based on what happened last night? Well, if we're going to brief the firefighters at, say, 6 o'clock in the morning, I've got to be up early to look over all that information to make sure we're still good with the plan. So I got up at 5. Now, by the end of the day, you've been making decision after decision. You've been having discussions with people. Maybe the fire chief from the local community or the mayor is wanting to talk, and the incident commander has you talking to these people because they want to talk to someone of the firefighters per se. And so you're getting a lot of inputs. It's very, very stressful. Not that you think it's stressful, because that's what you know, that you're so used to it, you don't realize it's stressful. And by the time you go to bed, you might plan to be in bed by 10 o'clock. But you're never in bed by 10 o'clock. You're going to your tent finally at 11 o'clock. And invariably, the radio goes off and you need to answer someone on the radio. They're calling you about something or other. Or some information came in to the planning section late, and they want to know what you want to do about this. And so something always keeps you up, and finally you get to bed around midnight, and you're exhausted. And you get 5 hours of sleep. Hopefully you fall asleep and you're not just sitting there stressing about what's going on the line, because you got firefighters out there. And if there's some hazardous activity going on, which just being out on a fire at night with trees falling down, the snags coming down at night, it's dangerous, and so you worry about your people. So that describes a little bit of your day. You're getting 5 hours of sleep, hopefully, and you're running nonstop every minute of that day on these big fires. And you might do that for 2 or 3 weeks. Now, at the end of the 2 or 3 weeks, you got to drive. Maybe it's a day's drive to get home. Maybe it's a 2-day drive to get home. Maybe it's only a long day that would normally be just a long day's drive, but because you're so exhausted, this has happened to me. I left a fire one time in California. I was driving back to Washington. I had friends that lived about an hour or so away from where the fire was, and I was actually going to get to their house and spend the night and get some sleep, get some good sleep in a bed before I made the long drive back to the north. I couldn't even drive that hour. I was so exhausted. I had to pull off into a parking lot of a Walmart and sleep for about an hour and a half. Now, it was in the morning. I had just slept the night that night. I'd gotten up, I'd gone through the demob process, got all my papers signed, I started driving, and I couldn't even make it an hour. I had to pull into a Walmart parking lot to sleep for an hour, and then I drove to my friend's house where I spent the night, and drove home the next day. But that's the kind of exhaustion that we feel when we leave these long-term incidents like that. Now, one of the interesting things about it is that almost invariably, after I leave a big incident, I would have a period of time where I would start crying. Now, that's kind of a bare your soul kind of information that I'm sharing there. I would never share that when I was working. I would never tell the guys that I worked with, oh yeah, do you start crying when you drive home too from the fire? You know, because I assume they don't. And I haven't even had that conversation with my women firefighter friends. But I don't know why I would cry. And it wasn't like I'd have to pull over to the side of the road and start sobbing. It's not that kind of crying. I would just get sad. And I believe that the stress of worrying about 1,000 firefighters that you're directing out on the fire lines, in combination with the fatigue from lack of sleep and the emotional fatigue from the stress and the decision fatigue, would just weigh on me to the point where I was overwhelmed. At some point, I would just, it felt like real sadness sweeping over me, and I would weep for a little bit. Let's say I was leaking. I would tear up. And I don't know why. It happened every year. I mean, every year coming home from a big fire, maybe sometimes it happened 2 or 3 times a year, depending on the fire season, that this would happen. It happened when I went to New York City and was there working at 9/11 to pile all that time. And that seemed more reasonable because I had heard so many terrible stories from people who the horrors that they saw and they relayed to me. And so it made more sense that maybe that was an emotional letdown when I left. But same thing would happen to me. Same thing would happen to me when I was leaving a big fire that I had been on for a long time. I was telling John and Ann before we started the recording this morning that coming back from a big fire one time, my friend Mark and I, who were both ops chiefs on the same team, and Mark is the gentleman in the story that is the title of the story is Ode to a Great Firefighter and His Ham Sandwich. And it's a great, it's meant to be a great story about Mark because Mark has passed away now. But one time we were driving back from a fire and he was in his truck and I was in mine and we were going down the highway and it was about a day's drive to get back to wherever we were going. And he was living in Oregon and I was living in Central Washington and we were going to stay up. We're, you know, talking on the phone and on the radio down the highway as we're driving in each in our own car. And then we're going to get to a junction where he's going to head south and I'm going to continue straight. And so we said, let's stop and get a sandwich or something at a restaurant and we'll have lunch and then we'll split up. Now, we had just spent the last 14 or 18 days together working these 18-hour days, making decision after decision after decision, and we were wiped out and getting very little sleep. And so we go into this restaurant and the waitress puts the menus in front of us and what do you guys want to drink? Okay, well, you know, we ordered water or tea or something. And then she comes back and says, have you decided what you want to eat? Oh, no, we really haven't even thought about it yet. Okay, I'll come back and check with you in a little bit. So she leaves and we're looking at the menus and she comes back, you know, and we're still talking a little bit, but we're just kind of sitting there without a lot to say because we've been speaking to each other, you know, 20 hours a day for the last 3 weeks. And she says, you know what you want? And I look at her and I said, I don't know. And I look at Mark, you know, you decide. And he says, I don't know. I can't make one more decision. And here we are sitting in some little restaurant on the side of a highway. You know, the choices aren't like, you know, shrimp scampi and filet mignon. You know, the sandwiches, the choices are, do you want a BLT or a burger or a bowl of chili? That's the choices. Couldn't decide. We were so tired of making decisions that we couldn't even decide what to have for lunch. Now, when I'm at the fire, or when any of us are at the fires, it's not like you feel like you're stressed out. It's not like you're nervous. It's not like you're feeling, oh my God, they're asking me if I want to send this hotshot crew to that ridge or some other division. It's not like you're worrying about that. You're not. You're just, you're making decisions. You're getting stuff done. You're on your game. And we do that job because we like it. We enjoy it. But it took me a long time to understand that it's still stressful. I had to go to physical therapy one time, and the physical therapist said, well, you hold a lot of stress in your body because of your job. I said, I don't have any stress because of my job. My job doesn't cause me stress. And she just looked at me and rolled her eyes. She goes, oh, you guys all talk the same way. You know, cops and firefighters say you don't have any stress. And so when I started doing biofeedback with this machine to relax some certain muscles in my abdomen, it was like, oh my gosh, oh, there is stress. I never noticed how much stress I had in my body. Well, I believe that when I would leave these incidents, these long incidents, and the stress of and the worry of firefighters getting hurt, because they get hurt all the time on these fires, and they're working for you, you're the one directing them to certain areas of the fire, I think that caused so much stress that there is an emotional letdown when I would leave the fire and I'm driving and I'm relaxed now, I'm driving down the road. Sometimes I would have to take more rests. I would have to pull over on the side of the road to sleep, like I described earlier. And I think in those times is when I just would start tearing up, and the tears would just flow down my cheeks. And it's a weird thing, because it's like, well, what am I crying about? I'm not sad about anything in particular, but, you know, maybe I was. And I want to stress that it wasn't like I was sobbing, crying. It wasn't like I was upset about something. It wasn't any of that. I had been doing a good job. You know, I think I have, in my profession, I think I had a great reputation for being a very competent, very capable firefighter and fire chief and operations section chief. But I think that was just this letdown, this emotional letdown. Now, I spent my whole career avoiding any admission that the job caused me stress. As I told you, it wasn't that long ago that I finally went to a physical therapist for some problems, and she showed me that I was carrying stress in my body. And earlier this fall, I got approached by a woman by the name of Anna Christina Hicks, and she runs a group that does counseling for first responders, and has a website called Tools of Hope. And I was exposed as being a speaker on this conference. It was a Zoom conference because of the situation we're in nationally or internationally. It was a Zoom conference, but there were hundreds. I think there were 600 people over the course of two different sessions, and these are three-day sessions, talking, and I was one of the speakers, talking about stress and burning out because of work. And I've spoken about this subject on several other of these stories that I've recorded for the website, but I wanted to make the point here that firefighters and first responders and nurses and soldiers and anyone who's working in a real stressful job, and it could be an office job, it could be something unrelated to first responders, I think we are impacted by this stuff, air quotes, stuff, more than we want to acknowledge, more than we think it's healthy to acknowledge, because if you don't talk about it, it's not real. You know, that's a good That's a good coping mechanism, but to deny the impacts of our work. And so here we are at New Year's Eve and the holidays and the COVID and the elections and all the crap that, you know, you try not to talk about, or you're selective about who you talk about it with because you don't want to acknowledge some weakness to coworkers or people that you don't necessarily trust. So I think it's really important to have a group of friends that you can share stuff with. You know, I've never talked about crying at the end of a fire with anyone before, talking about it with Anne and John. It would have, you know, because my image, or the image I tried to portray, and the image that I think I had with the people who worked for me in my organization, was that I was tough. I was a tough firefighter. And tough firefighters don't cry. It's kind of like that line from the movie, you know, there's no crying in baseball. Well, there's no crying in firefighting. Well, you know what? There is crying in firefighting. There is crying in firefighting. And there's crying in law enforcement. There's crying in all of our professions that have a lot of stress. And I think it's important just that we all admit it and that we all get over ourselves. I should have gotten over myself years ago. It took me retiring and to finally be honest. And so anyway, that's the essence of the story this week. I wanted people to kind of acknowledge that when times are tough, it's okay to leak, because I like to say I'm not crying, I'm just leaking a little bit. And so here we are at the new year. Let's be supportive of each other. Let's be honest and open with each other. Find your group of friends that you can share with and feel safe, because you just can't share with anyone, but it's important to share. John and Ann, you guys have anything you want to add?
Maybe you could ask your men firefighter friends what it's like for them. Leave a comment.
Oh, that would be great.
It's like driving back from a fire after a long-term fire.
Well, you know what? That's a great suggestion, John. So I'll reiterate that for guys and gals, if you would leave a comment about what you feel like after those long-term incidents. And for some of you guys, say you're on a hotshot crew or you're on engines and your work is more physical, what does it feel like for you when you're coming home? If you're supervising, do you have those same anxieties that I had worrying about your guys? Anne, what about you?
Well, when we were talking earlier, could it be that during a long, intense fire, you're able to just focus on that, nothing else? So you put your personal life aside, you know, maybe kind of like in a little satchel.
Right.
And once the fire is out, and any challenges, you know, that are in your personal life or problems, and then once it's over, it all comes rushing back.
I think that is very astute. I think in my case, I've had a lot of sorrow in my life, and I think that may very well describe some of what I've gone through.
You're able to compartmentalize. Is that the word?
Yes, that's the word.
Yeah.
Right. Very good. Well, folks, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. I look forward to comments and input and likes and emails, and if you don't like it, you can tell me that too. So I'm going to wish everybody a happy new year, and we'll see you all in 2021. Thanks.